Hello and welcome to another episode of the Football History Boys podcast. I'm Gareth Thomas and joining me as always is just across the way in Cardiff from your room, Ben Jones.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here. It feels nice getting to do this side of the podcast rather than introducing it this time.
Happy birthday, first and foremost. It's your birthday this week.
Thank you.
You're repping your new podcast mic, so hopefully that has some sort of impact on when we're replaying this podcast for people.
Yeah, present from my fiance's parents, actually, the podcast mic, so thank you very much to them.
You've got to get that in, especially if they're going to be your in-laws. Brilliant. Okay, you join us today then as we come to the end of our week and a half tournament that we've been running, the Football History Boys' Greatest International Sides of All Time. We started with 32 sides a week ago today. We will finish with just one of the greatest sides of all time, and that will be on Wednesday evening when we announce that. What we're going to do today then is catch up on some of those sides who have already gone out. We'll talk about some of the best sides there and why they were included on our list of 32. And we're also going to have a look at the final. As it looks at the moment, at time of recording, there's five who could be in that final four. Obviously, that'll be cut down to four later this afternoon. So, Ben, as we head into the final four, as it stands, just before we came on air, just before we started recording, France had just, by a very, very small margin, beaten Wales 2016. So, France 98 to 2000 had beaten Wales 2016. And we had Scotland of the 1870s and 1880s just narrowly beat Netherlands 1974 to 1978. It was incredibly close, though, wasn't it?
It was remarkably close. I mean, like you said, very small margins, only two votes in it to get to pip Wales for France, and only three votes in it as the Scotch professors, so the Scottish team of the 1880s, defeated that incredible Dutch side of the 1970s. I think that's probably the shock of the tournament so far.
Yeah, I mean, the Scottish have been on it, haven't they, in terms of the Twitter poll. Over our Twitter, at TFHBS, is where they've all been running. Lots of them have been very fair and you know, people taking it, voting on who they think was the greatest international side. That Scottish team, they've united as a country and they've pushed Scotland through. But we're talking about that because a lot of people, I think, are going to be unhappy about that, seeing Netherlands go out. But why, if we start with Scotland then, why do you think this team, why do we include them and why are they perhaps one of the greatest international sides of all time?
It's quite a nice one for us, this, because, of course, we love writing about football in the 1870s and 80s when it was, becoming much bigger with professionalism and things. And Scotland, obviously the second international team of all time. That side which introduced us to the combination game, to the passing style of football, was an incredible team. They used to defeat England on pretty much every occasion they played them. Of course, there wasn't that many other teams to play against back then. Obviously, you had England, who they played against every year. I think they had some famous wins, I think 5-1, 6-1, 7-2. I think they only lost three times to England in the first 18 games. They obviously had to play Wales then in 1876, and later on in the 1880s, they would have played against Ireland as well. So not too much in terms of competition, but the fact they used to pretty much win it every year, and I think they won five or six home nation championships in the 1880s, shows how good they are. So, they probably deserve to be in there because of what they've done for the game, for the initial game, promoting it on an international scale and really seeing it thrive in Scotland ahead of the rival of rugby.
Yeah, I had a conversation with some friends as well, saying, well, how is that Scotland team included when actually they only played probably three international sides at most? I think, they were some of the founding, I guess, fathers of the game, making it what it is today. Professionalism coming from Scotland. Anyone who has watched that Netflix series, I know there's some historians who are not necessarily overly keen on everything in it historically, but very, very good TV series. And in there, you've got the Scottish sort of higher men that you can hire down from the Scotland, from the Glasgow and areas like that where they played football more professionally. And they were offered jobs at the factories such as Blackburn, and obviously Blackburn Olympic go on to become the first professional team or the non sort of upper class team to win the FA Cup in the 1880s, and they are influenced by Scotland too. So I think they have a real impact on them. So yeah, I think it's fair enough. But obviously, shame for Netherlands. I mean, why was Netherlands one of those teams that people love? I'm actually wearing my Netherlands 1974 shirt as we record. why is that Netherlands team highly regarded?
Well, Netherlands, of course, are just the 1970s team is a real cult team, isn't it? It's a team which its legend is even bigger by the fact they didn't actually win the World Cup in 74 and 78 because they lost both finals. And I think that really has added to their legend. It adds to that sort of what could have been sort of story. Great side, obviously. Johan Cruyff is the main man, and Rinus Michels is the architect of the squad. Creating that notion of total football, of real attacking flair and guile, you know, after the 1960s, which was dominated by Catenaccio, so a really defensive style. So, you know, total football really revolutionised the game, and it was seen no better in that Dutch side. You know, the 74 World Cup, we had Johan Cruyff's turn, you know, an incredible piece of skill, which most people seem to link to that side. You got some great players in there, Johan Neeskens, and then later in 78, people like Ari Hahn, who obviously scored those incredible 35 yarders at that World Cup. And the teams they were playing against were no slouches either. They had some fantastic squads in that World Cup from across Europe and across South America. So the fact that they were beating them and getting through just shows how good they were.
Yeah, I think everyone loves that 74 side. They're probably, when we talk about them, one of the greatest sides to never win something. They are one of those superb teams. And of course, as you said, Johan Cruyff and his Cruyff turn influenced then perhaps Hal Robson-Kahn, 2016, mentioned many, many times on this podcast. Wales, though, 2016, we put them in their home nations. Obviously, we're both Welsh ourselves. We said they're going in. We're not having any arguments about it. That Wales side are there. They had the best ever run for a Welsh side in an international tournament. They were superb in Euro 2016. I think they won over a lot of Europe. And we've had tweets, actually, from sort of Belgian people who remember, obviously, the Cruyff turn that Robson-Kahn did against them, saying, actually, that Wales side should be there. They are rightly one of the greatest. And when we talk about not necessarily the best, but significant and, you know, enjoyable sides to watch, that Wales side were one of them. However, they've been dumped out by France 98 to 2000. So what are your thoughts on that 98-2000 side? Do you think that's fair that they've beaten Wales just ever so slightly?
I think that French side from the late 90s and, you know, early 2000s is one of the sides that me and you probably remember as being the first sort of dominant international sides when we were growing up. Because of, you know, 98 World Cup, we would have been only, you know, five, but we would have seen it briefly on TV, and we would have obviously had some sort of early memory of France winning. And obviously, year 2000, I can remember watching that final and seeing David Trezeguet's golden goal. And they were a dominant side. And the fact that they you know, won the World Cup in 98 when they weren't fancied to win it, with quite a young team, a team of, you know, multi, loads of different backgrounds, a very multicultural side. And then they followed up with a year 2000 win against a really strong Italian team. Just shows how good they were. And they had, you know, Zidane, Deschamps, Perez, Henri, Wiltord, Trezeguet. You know, the list goes on of some absolutely incredible players. And the fact that they did win both tournaments shows that they have a real sense of dominance. You know, of course, we love Wales because the Euro 2016, that was like, you know, the best summer ever for us. It was just incredible. You know, I was doing my PGCE and finishing a day of teaching and going watching the football afterwards, and then obviously Wales getting so far was just we couldn't even believe it. We couldn't believe that they even won, scored a goal at first. So the fact they got the semi-finals was amazing.
Yeah,
but they were like a very respected team, and I think that what we found with, we put them in as hosts, and no one's complained. If they, everyone's been like, yeah, fine, Wales 2016, good side. I think people from wider Europe have quite a lot of respect for them. You know, the fans were brilliant over in France. They, you know, brought a real sense of humour and fun with them, but never, you know, went too far. And obviously beating Belgium and, you know, really shocking some great sides. And, you know, they were in a pretty tough group that in that year as well, and to get through was pretty impressive. So, yeah, you know, great side, but you can't have them being bettered by, you can't have them beating France because, like I say, a World Cup and Euros back-to-back is ridiculous.
Yeah, oh, ridiculous. That France side were so good. As you said, yeah, they were the first side that we remember as proper world-class. And you look at that, you know, Zidane as one of the focal points of it, but the whole side were brilliant. Yeah, and Wales, you know, very rightfully there. We've got a big Welsh following, so I think we were a little bit worried they may have won the whole tournament, and you know, we wouldn't have minded them getting to the semis. But when we talk about some of the sides they could be playing, one that is still ongoing and will be finished by the time this pod is released, is either Brazil 1970 or Spain of 2008 to 2012. Who do you want to deal with first? Let's go with Brazil 1970. I mean, this is many people's favourites for the tournament, many people's favourite side of all time, those who remember them, who are old enough to remember seeing them play. Why is that 1970 side then just so sort of remembered, so famous in football history?
Well, first of all, I'll give you the scores and the doors between Brazil and Spain. So we've had 250 votes, not bad. There's an hour and 24 minutes left. The score is 50% to 50%. So it's neck and neck, two great sides there. But Brazil 1970 is that side which, you know, our dads and our dad's generation all seem to really revere as like this incredible team. Playing attractive football, building on the disappointment of going out in the quarterfinals, I think, of the World Cup in 1966. They had to change their style, change their training methods. They had to really put in the hard work in order to make that team work. You read Pelé's autobiography, he says, you know, 3 months before the World Cup, there was training going on, getting us all used to play with each other, getting us ready. And you see that no clearer than in that goal in the 1970 World Cup final when Carlos Alberto scores. I don't think Pelé even looks to his right. He just knows that Carlos Alberto is coming to the right of him. And he just passes it in, and obviously Alberto scores that wonder goal. And it's just great team to watch, and it's great to watch back the footage. And you see how their role is so attacking. The defence isn't great, to be fair, and you know the goalkeepers from Brazil have never been that good. But yeah, the way they go forward, it's like watching a team now, and you've got like Jorginho on the left, and he's just cutting inside and, you know, laying it off. Well, you think he scored, I think he's top scorer at tournament as well. And they beat a great Italian team in the final, and they smashed them 4-1. I know Italy obviously played extra time and might have been a bit tired, but you know, still beating a 4-1 in a final is pretty impressive. And I think, you know, they're rightly known as one of the best, because you could even link it down to 1958 and 62. A lot of players, you know, in all the squads, three World Cups out of four is unbeatable, really.
Yeah, I mean, just a fact I saw today actually on Twitter, people tweeting us different things about that Brazil side. Brazil, obviously, they've won five World Cup since it began back in 1930, their first in 58. Out of those different squads, 90 out of their 111 players have actually been playing in Brazil domestically at the time, which is an incredible stat, really, isn't it? Because we so often here in Europe think of Europe is where the strongest football is happening, and you know, Europe is where you need to be playing to be able to be successful. But actually, look at that, 90 out of 111 of their Brazil World Cup winning squads were all playing in Brazil. And when you look at 58, 62 and 70, 66 out of 66 of those players were all playing in Brazil at the time. Ridiculous, a ridiculous stat. In 94, it was 11 out of the 22. And in 2002, it was 13 out of the 23. So it's still quite a high proportion, half in 94 and over half in 2002. So, you know, the Brazilian league, I think we can't exclude as well as actually having a really important impact on football too. So I think they are, if they get to the final, and as you said, by the time this is released, we'll know. If they get to the semi-final, they will rightly be there. The other side they are up against, I mean, this is a huge clash, is that Spain 2008 to 2012 side. Why might people be considering voting for them? I mean, they've been helped out in their votes by Football España, which is a big football account of Spanish football, and they've tweeted it, trying to get people to vote for Spain too. So they may have a bit of a late burst and get there. If they get there, why do they deserve their place?
Well, Spain, of course, you know, when they won the Euros 2008 when we were both in year 10. So we can remember that really well. What a side. I mean, I remember them playing that tiki-taka football, and it was the first time we'd really seen it, and it was so good to watch. It was much more attacking than it is now. I think sort of the tiki-taka approach has sort of gone now. It's more, you know, Barcelona or Man City just sort of pass it around for ages, often without any outcome, and it can be a bit boring to watch now. But back in 2008, it wasn't at all. It was so entertaining, and we all loved it. It was really short, intricate passes, but it was to get forward, and they would get forward, and then you get Xavi or Iniesta or Marcos Senna in 2008 playing through the ball, and you know, David Villa or Torres, you know, slotting away, and it was so good to watch. And then obviously, I think 2010, then they obviously win the World Cup as well. They back it up, even when they lost their first game in Switzerland. I think in that time, they only lost, I think, one game from about 2006 to 2010, and that was against, I think, the USA in the Confederations Cup. So, you know, what only one defeat is ridiculous, in you know, these days as well. And most of those games were consecutive wins as well. So winning the World Cup, of course, it was incredible. I think what's different to them and Brazil, so they had a great defence as well, Spain. Puyol, Piqué, Ramos, Capdevila, incredible players. You've Casillas in goal, who was, you know, a world-class goalkeeper. And I don't think they conceded much in that whole World Cup, did they? I think they might conceded one or two goals the whole time, which is pretty impressive. So they get to the final, obviously win it, and then 2012, they win the Euros again. And I think they, you know, they've got to be one of the only teams to ever win three back-to-back major international tournaments. That Euros as well, beating Italy 4-0 in the final, it's just, you know, amazing. And that was a good Italy team who had beaten Germany in the semis. I think I remember watching Jordi Alba's goal in that game, and he just runs pretty much length of the pitch after being, you know, put through, and just slots it past Buffon. So, yeah, that Spanish team is amazing. They brought that style of tiki-taka initially through Luis Aragonés, and then Vicente del Bosque takes it on as well and wins the next two. So it's not like they even have the same manager in that time. They change the manager, but they keep that sort of attitude. They keep that mentality and ideology. And, you know, you have to put a long bet on to see anyone do that again. Euros, World Cup Euros.
Yeah, they were ridiculous. I mean, that side was so good. As you said, Aragonés firstly and then del Bosque. Just both had made tiki-taka really enjoyable, isn't it? I think tiki-taka almost now is almost a bit of a negative connotation of people saying it's boring and, you know, passing back and forth and having 70% possession but not scoring. That wasn't the case with that Spain squad, and that certainly wasn't the case with the Barcelona squad that were also doing it under Guardiola at the same time. You know, remember that was going on in club football whilst Spain were dominating internationally as well. So I think that side is ridiculous. And, you know, if they are to get there and get to the final, I think they would be rightly considered as one of the best ever, because they were just superb, absolutely superb, that Spain side.
And of course, Tiki Taka is one of the moments in our book, Football's 50 Most Important Moments. Moment number 44, Tiki Taka. And we talk about Spain and Barcelona's influence on that. The last line in that moment is, this was football at its purest. Football we know and football we love. There we go. And it was pure football, and that's why we loved it. You know, the early 2000s, you got Mourinho's sort of renaissance of Catenaccio. So, you know, getting this sort of style of football really was pleasing for us all to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back and discuss a couple of the other sides that are still in with a shout at that title. Welcome back. Just before we kick off again, just to hand over, Ben, tell us about our competition that is running that listeners can still get involved in if they are listening before Wednesday evening.
So we've had a competition on Twitter. It is our pinned tweet. So if you need to find the competition, it will be at the very top of our Twitter feed. It's a chance to win our book. So our book was released 2 weeks ago today. And thanks to our publisher, Pitch Publishing, they are giving away a free book of ours. So you can get involved by finding it on Twitter. And all you need to do is to follow us at TFHBS. Then all you need to do then is retweet the post and comment to us using the hashtag 50footballmoments. When you do that, you'll be entered into the competition and you'll have a chance to win. I think so far we've had about 125 retweets, which is really good. So a lot of entrants, so hopefully you can win that competition.
It's well worth it, isn't it? And if you don't win, you can still get our book. You head over to lots of different places for that. One of those is Amazon, of course, the purveyor of all things online shopping during lockdown. Where else are selling it though, Ben?
You can get it at Waterstones, WH Smith, and A Great Read.
So check that out for us. That'd be lovely if you did so. Okay, back to our tournament to find the greatest international side of all time. Remember, as we say greatest, we're not necessarily saying the best, the most successful. We're talking about the ones who made a big impact on football, a great impact on the game. One of those, most certainly then, are Hungary of 1950-1954. The only tournament they won was the Olympics in 52, but they are still considered one of the greatest ever sides that played international football. They're one of our favourites, aren't they, Ben? We absolutely love this Hungarian side. We get stuck into them in so many different ways. In our book, you can read about them, but in our writing as well on the website, thefootballhistoryboys.com, you can read lots about this Hungarian side. But why are they heading towards perhaps a semi-final, even though they didn't actually win a World Cup?
You know what? I'm going to leave this one to you because you love talking about Hungary. I always see your eyes light up when you start talking about them. And we're on Zoom right now, so I can actually see you and I can see those eyes. So
yeah,
I'll hear from you this time.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, this Hungary side are just brilliant. When we started talking about, you know, the Football History Boys and stories of the game, we got stuck into this side, really. You found out about them, even though they didn't win that tournament, under Gustav Chávez, but also Hungarian managers at the time. So the people like Béla Gutman, who managed domestically and was a phenomenal manager in the 1950s. This side, from 1950 to 1954, dominated Europe. They smashed teams they played. One of those teams, most famously, 1953, was England at Wembley. Wembley had been the home of English football. They had not lost to a side outside of the British Isles, so outside of Scotland, Wales, or Ireland, in their whole history, England's proud history. And Hungary come and they visit them and they lose 6-3. And then England go and visit them again 6 months later and they play them on Hungarian soil and they lose 7-1. This side were a phenomenal team. They head to the 1954 World Cup. I think it's 23 games unbeaten without notes in front of me. 23 games in a row unbeaten. They head to the World Cup and everyone thinks they're going to win this 1954 World Cup. They dominate that tournament. Their main man, Puskás, picks up an injury. And quite sadly, I think for them, that sort of kills them off a little bit. They had other phenomenal footballers in that squad too, but Puskás was the man who made it all happen. He gets injured. He does play the final, but he's not fully fit. And they lose in what is called the Miracle of Bern to West Germany. West Germany's first World Cup. And obviously, just 9 years after the end of the Second World War. So this side were a really, really significant team. A lot of people like them. But as we said, it wasn't just internationally, it was domestically too. So people like Béla Gutman, who went to South America, who taught the South Americans, many people say, different ways of playing the game. And in 58, using the tactics that Béla Gutman used when he first moved to South America, that 58 World Cup side in Brazil, of Brazil win the tournament. Then they win it in 62 using his tactics again. So he had such a lasting impact on the game. So I think that Hungarian side are rightly there. They are, as you said, they are one of my favourite ever sides. So I'd like to see them do well. They could be heading for a semi-final against Scotland of the 1870s and 1880s. So sort of two purveyors of the game, two very early purveyors of the game, but also we've got a passionate Scottish support. So I do feel for the Hungarians, a bit of an overwhelming one. However, that Hungarian side looked like they've beaten off Poland, which is quite an incredible result, really, considering how Poland have performed. Now, we tweeted out this Polish team earlier in the tournament, and in their group stage, they had a tough group, and they smashed that because of the polls on Twitter. We had a retweet from a couple of Polish people saying, "Polls to the polls," and they absolutely dominated it. 80% of that of the vote in the groups. A huge amount in their last 16 game, and now they are heading possibly out to that Hungarian side. So it seems like maybe even the Polish people have accepted that Hungarian side deserve to beat them. But Ben, people are saying that Poland side, again, like Hungary, they didn't win anything necessarily in that time, a World Cup or anything. Why are they included?
Well, they're a great side, and again, they're one of these sort of cult teams that, you know, everyone seems to like who was watching football in the 1970s and early 80s because they were really good at 74 World Cup. I think they came third. They actually beat Brazil in the third place playoff, which is, you know, really impressive. Brazil, of course, only 4 years after that great 1970s team. They kept going then to the 80s, you know, with players like Boniek and stuff. So they had really good players. 1974 World Cup was a different style of tournament. The format was different. It wasn't just a classic group and then knockout. You know, you had a first round and then you had a second round of groups as well. Second round of groups, Poland came second in their group behind West Germany. So they were very close to reaching the final, actually, of that tournament. Because what you'd have is you'd have your initial group stage and then the final eight teams went into two groups to compete and against each other. And the two winners of those groups would play in the final. So they came second. in their group and then ended up coming third overall. Great players. Gregor Gelato was the top scorer at that tournament with 7 goals. So, you know, that they are a good team, you know, and if Wales are in there for getting into the Euro semi-finals, you know, then they probably deserve to be in as well. I mean, we had Portugal 2000 to 2006 in there, and they, you know, they didn't do that much. They got to a Euro final, but that's about it, you know. So I don't think we can really have a go against Poland being there, because they did pretty well to get, you know, third place at a World Cup. And I think that's kind of been forgotten about, like a lot of Eastern European football, actually. So it's quite nice to see him in there. We've learned stuff as well by having him in and researching, which is always good for us because we always love to learn. So it's a good one in there. And obviously, they've got incredible fans because, like we said, they in both polls, they were so far behind. And then I think one retweet from someone with about 30,000 followers. And it's exploded. And we ended up getting, you know, hundreds and hundreds of Polish fans retweeting it and voting. And they would win by an absolute landslide, I think. They ended up beating that West Germany side 74-90%, 10%. So they just completely obliterated them. But
yeah.
I think we just had a message from someone now, a Polish fan, saying, you know, not even he could vote against that Hungarian side of the 1950s. So I think that looks pretty cut and dry, that Hungary will reach the semi-finals to face the Scotch professors of Scotland.
It's a fine clash. Big one. Yeah, and you know, absolutely. I think when we were drawing up that list, a lot of people said that Polish side, didn't they? It was more than, you know, more than sort of 5 or 6 tweets saying you need to include that Polish side, and so we, you know, we did, and they've done very well, and, you know, rightly so. Just before we look at some of the sides eliminated, one who weren't included would be the Italian side of 1950. Now that's because they didn't have a particularly good World Cup in 1950. 1934. They won. 1938, they won. They continued really through the war years and post-war. They looked like they were going to be very, very good. And a day of recording, 4th of May, you posted earlier, Ben, that it's 71 years today since a disaster that really shattered the hopes of the Italians in 1950. You know, 1949 is when it happened. Tell us a little bit about that disaster and why actually perhaps we haven't got an Italian 1950 team in there.
Well, there's a reason we haven't got an Italian side in there from 1950 to 1970. You know, that whole period was a bit of a dark time for Italian football. So the 4th of May 1949 was the Superga disaster, when the Grande Torino side tragically lost their lives in a plane crash. Coming back from an international friendly or a club friendly abroad in Lisbon, they're flying back through a bit of fog and what they think might have been a dodgy altimeter in the plane meant they were flying too low without realizing because of the cloud. Unfortunately, when the cloud cleared, the plane was flying straight into the Superga Basilica in Torino, on top of a hill, flew straight into the side, and of course it exploded, and everyone on the side unfortunately died, including the journalists and other passengers as well. It was a team who were incredible. They'd won consecutive Serie A's. They were a side which the whole of Italy was proud about. After the Second World War, of course, Italy, for the most part, on the losing side of that, not maybe universally liked afterwards, after the fascism of the 30s and 40s. And all of a sudden, Italy finds hope and identity in this Torino team, which is so good. And of course, they had a side which, you know, most of their players were in the Italian national team as well. So when they unfortunately died, the Italian national team had lost most of its starting 11. And so what John Foote writes in his incredible book, Calcio, The History of Italian Football, he writes that it set Italian football, or Calcio, back at least 30 years. So, you know, the fact they'd gone, the country really struggled to get over it. You know, Italy, as we know, is a very emotional country as it is. So having that happen to them was massive. It's a moment in our book as well. It's a moment 15 in our new book. I'll just read to you the last bit I wrote in there. So it says, the legacy of Superga is still felt strongly today. Torino had struggled to recover in the years following the event and have arguably never reached the achievement set by Mazzola and co. Mazzola being their best player. What sets this moment apart is the question of what could have been. Torino were, in 1949, a side created history with each and every game they played, and they are, without a doubt, one of football's greatest ever teams. The side came to reflect the rejuvenation and reconstruction of Italy, and people across the country could see hope again. Despite the millions of deaths in World War II, it would be the 31 in May 1949 that truly brought the nation together. There we go.
Lovely, lovely summary. If you're enjoying that, as we said, you can pick up our book in all your online book places. But yeah, an incredibly important moment, and one that this week is obviously the anniversary of that. And so an important one, because who knows, as you say there, what could have been? That could have been an Italian side of the 50s who, you know, you can assume that potentially they may well have had a World Cup out of those teams. That Torino side, again, as you said, never recovered really. So definitely worth talking about when we talk about some of those greatest teams of all time. Okay, let's take one more break and then we'll come back and discuss some of the sides that have been kicked out of the tournament so far, who've lost the public vote, and who perhaps deserve to be considered some of the greatest of all time. Welcome back. We've been discussing our tournament that is running up on Twitter to find the greatest side of all time, the greatest international team of all time. That finishes on Wednesday evening, as we said, so make sure you get your votes in if you're listening before then. If not, go back and check out the thread. We've made one nice long thread for you on at TFHBS for you to be able to scroll back through and see all the sides in the tournament. But obviously, as the tournament goes on, some sides, some people's favourites are eliminated. And there's one that I particularly wanted to pick up on. Is the Argentina 1986 side. Now, a lot of people think this is a brilliant team, but we had a message from someone on Facebook saying, you can't include this team. They're based upon cheating. You can't call them one of the greatest moments in football. You can't call them one of the greatest teams because they did it by cheating. Ben, why should the Argentina 1986 team, the World Cup winners, why should they be included? They lost to Netherlands 1974 to 1978 in the last 16, but why are they there at all?
I think you said it there, really. The World Cup winners, isn't it? I mean... There you go. They won a World Cup, so they're obviously a good side. And they got, you know, Maradona is as very peak playing for that side. And yeah, of course, he has the hand of God in there, which only adds, I think, more legendary status to that team, really. And, you know, minutes later, then he runs past the entire English team and scores the best goal of all time as well. So it's an amazing team. They beat some fantastic sides. They beat an incredible West Germany team in that final in 86. They beat a really good English side, you know, albeit a bit dodgily in the quarterfinals. They beat one of the best Belgian sides of all time in the semi-finals, you know, Enzo Schifo and things. So, and that was another side, that Belgian team, which many had asked us to include in our final list.
Yeah.
So you can't really deny them. You know, they beat that team. They beat some fantastic sides. They are an incredible side. And then, you know, 4 years later, they follow up by getting to the World Cup final again, this time losing to West Germany in the final. So, you know, back-to-back finalists, I don't know how you can complain. It's obviously someone who's still... It's probably someone who was maybe a child in 86 and still
hurts
feels bitter about it.
It still hurts them. Yeah, I think they are absolutely rightly there. Another one I want to discuss was Nigeria of 1994-1996. A side that a load of people... When we were constructing this list and we spent a couple of days doing so, taking suggestions from people... Loads of people said you've got to have that Nigerian side. Why, in particular, is this sort of one of the best African sides of all time people consider?
Well, it's a side from the early 90s or mid 90s where, you know, if we were picking a side from Africa, it probably would be from around that period. Bit of I wouldn't say a revival. It's probably the first time that African teams really did, you know, emerge on the world stage. Cameroon in the 1990s, of course, getting to the quarterfinals of the World Cup. And then Nigeria pop along in 94 and get to the quarterfinals as well. Fantastic team, very attacking football, called Super Eagles. I think they beat they lost to Argentina in the group, I think, but they beat some really good teams, including that Bulgarian side, which got to the semi-finals. So, yeah, they did really well to get there, and they follow up with African Cup of Nations win and also an Olympic gold medal as well. So it's a young squad, a young team, but they're fantastic. And I remember in the 98 World Cup, my brother really going on and on about Nigeria, like, with players like JJ Okocha and Taribo West and things. They sort of brought a lot of fun to the game, and obviously the fans, you know, bringing all the cup things, it's fantastic. And African football really, really did profit from the success of that Nigerian side. Another cult team, really. And then that paves the way for, you know, your Senegals in 2002, beating France, of course, that great French team, which has, you know, just gone through in our tournament. You got Ghana then coming on 2006. South Africa hosting the World Cup in 2010. And all these things wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the success of Nigeria and before that Cameroon in the early 1990s. So it's a side which whose impact and legacy is so strong. And it would be quite a miss to leave them out of a tournament talking about the greatest teams of all time. Not only the best, you know, a lot of international sides would beat them, but in terms of their legacy and their scope and scale, they're huge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, think back to the 1974 World Cup with Zaire and the famous moment, the defender is it Elunga, where he comes out and kicks the ball away from a free kick, and people laugh and say these Africans, they don't know football. How do how, you know, they don't understand the rules of the game. But actually, with this 1990 side, and African football, as you said, Cameroon and Nigeria, and then into the 2000s with African sides actually causing upsets, you get people starting to respect African football, really, isn't it? And you know, it's beyond, it's wider than just the African Cup of Nations, that these guys are causing upsets on the international stage. So yeah, no, I absolutely think they were right to be included too. When you look at that list, and we limited to just three from each nation. There's three from Brazil, three from Germany, including West Germany, of course, three from Italy. There's a couple of other ones who appear twice. So Uruguay there twice with 1930 and 1950, their World Cup wins, and France in the 80s and France in the 90s. Denmark, surprisingly, perhaps get there twice with Denmark in the 80s and Denmark in 1992. One of those sides that a lot of people suggest that perhaps, probably, you know, you didn't expect to be there, I guess, would be Austria of 1932 to 1938. But when we talk about history and the importance of a side, this is again is another team. They were called the Wonder Team, weren't they? But they're a team that didn't ever achieve anything in the World Cup. But they were a team that were really hurt by the Second World War, weren't they? And Nazi Germany. And so why do you think people consider this side as one of the great teams, this Austrian team?
So, of course, came fourth in that World Cup in 1934. And yeah, like we said before and in previous podcasts, that side could have won the World Cup in 38. They had a great team, I think, with Matthias Sindelar up front. They'd been one of the main nations involved in really spreading football across Central Europe. Hugo Meisel, of course, one of, I think he was their coach, he came up with the idea of the Metropa Cup, which was a It was like almost an early form of the Champions League, really, and involved clubs from all around Central Europe all playing against each other to win. So it was a continental tournament. So Austria's influence on football is massive, and that side, you know, might have won it in 38 had they been there. Of course, they wouldn't have been there. They had to draw before the tournament started after the Anschluss with Germany, after Nazi Germany, of course, annexed the country and had a bit of a dodgy referendum and. You know, and Austria decided to join up with Germany, so they didn't. You know, they weren't officially a country anymore, so they couldn't compete by themselves in the World Cup. And of course, there's a famous game then I think between Austria and Germany where they, you know, they play almost like a celebration of the Anschluss. And Austria, a lot of the footballers aren't happy with what's happened, including Sindelar, and they wear instead of their usual white and black, they wear red and white, the colours of the Austrian flag. As a way of, you know, showing their national identity as Austrian and not German. And there's all these reports that Austria were missing chance after chance after chance on purpose until sort of the last 20 minutes. And I think Sindelar scores and someone else scores. And there's certain reports, I really don't know how true they are, of Sindelar celebrating excessively in front of the German fans. And then, of course, he goes missing, I think, a couple of years later. He dies in suspicious circumstances. And there's all sorts of conspiracies around that. Whether they're true or not, we don't know. But it obviously adds to the myth and the legend of that side. Anything you want to add?
Well, I just, you know, it's a brilliant story, isn't it? Quite a sad story that Wonder Team is torn apart by Nazi Germany that spreads throughout Europe. And yeah, who knows what happened to some of those stars of those teams? Because if you refused to play for the German side, you were banned from playing football. And you know, Sindelar was someone who was then found dead not very long later in sort of controversial circumstances. And a lot of people think perhaps there was some sort of German influence in that too. So yeah, I think absolutely fair enough. I mean, as we look through that list, and you know, encourage you, if you're listening to this, to head over to Twitter at TFHBS to check out the brackets designed by Reese Thomas, by the way, who is a graphic designer, my brother, but a great graphic designer, and to check out some of his work. As you look at the brackets and you see that this, as the tournament progressed and who stayed in and who went out, we've got some, you know, really hopefully touched some of football's greatest ever sides. And as we said, they're not necessarily the best always, but they are the ones who've left a lasting impact or a real deserve to be there because of what they did for the game. You know, it's more than just scorelines, as we've said so often in the past with the Football History Boys. It's more than just scorelines. It's the stories that are told and the influence they've had on people too. So I think they absolutely all deserve to be there, those 32 that we elected. Just before we come to a close though today, just to turn your attention to our website. It's still going, it's still ticking over. We've had a load of guest blogs lately, and I think one I wanted to point out, or a set I wanted to point out really, with a whole army of Scottish followers now because of this tournament, is check out the work done by Alex Horsbury. He's a Scottish radio presenter. He's written a load of stuff for us during lockdown up in Scotland for him. You know, he quite rightly said, do you want someone from Scotland to write about some Scottish stuff for you? Because we hadn't done a vast amount of Scottish football. And he's written a ton of different articles about Hibs, about Cowdenbeath, about Dundee, about the Scottish national team, about the World Cups, their greatest goals. So definitely go and check them out. There's a thread I've put on our Twitter as well where you can find all those articles he's written. There's a couple of other articles too. Is there anything you want to point out, Benny? Other articles in particular you want to say and direct people to?
I got one article from our friend More Than a Game 66 on the rivalry of Italy and Brazil at World Cups, and it's a really nice, really written piece, which he has loads of videos as well to accompany the writing. We've got part two of that coming out soon, and also we have another a blog from Stephen Brandt, which is going to be put up later today, on the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. He's a US writer and he has a really good knowledge of US football history, so we're going to be putting that up as well. So quite a few things to look out for. Just before we go as well, I've got the scores on the doors of the current polls. So I told you earlier the scores were 50-50 in the Spain and Brazil. So at the moment, looking at the current voting, we can see that they are still at 50%, 50%. So they're locked in it. And that, you know, I don't know what we're going to have to do if that ends up being a draw. And Hungary are way out ahead, 81% to 19%. So Hungary looking like they're going to qualify. And it looks like we're going to have to come up with maybe some sort of tiebreaker for Brazil and Spain.
Brilliant. Love that. Thank you for everyone who's taken part in it. Thank you everyone who follows us now, whether because of the competition or because of the tournament. Remember, you can check out that competition still. Head over to our Twitter at TFHBS. It's our pinned tweet, and you'll be able to enter that before Wednesday's final. If you have enjoyed that tournament, great. Please get involved. Please join the discussion. We love hearing from people about different things like that. And very finally, before we head off, please, of course, check out our book too, over on Amazon, over on A Great Read, on Waterstones, other places like that. Football's 50 Most Important Moments. We discuss some of the things we've talked about today. We look at football from 1857 right up until 2020, really, and talking about VAR. So we see the whole scope of football discussed throughout that book. So I hope you'll head over and take a look at that too. Thank you for joining me today, Ben.
Thank you very much, Gareth. I've very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. We'll get this out to you as quick as you can so you can listen to this as you watch the results come in for the semi-finals and the final over the next couple of days. Thank you for joining us.